Live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
Hooray! It's the most wonderful time of the year. I mean, week. Oh no, but it's the most wonderful time of the year as well, isn't it? Because we're entering that magnificent phase where we walk down the autumnal path to terrifying Halloween, or Samhain, if you want to be a bit of a pagan lunatic about it. But yes, it's Halloween, it's approaching. Hooray! And it is the time for all things spooky and dark and mischievous and evil and spirity and spooky and ghostly and horrific to come out of the shadows and say, excuse me, I'm going to scare the living shite out of you, is that okay? And I say, my, what a polite demon. And we get on like a house on fire with people in it. Anyway, enough of that jazz. How the hell are you? How am I, you ask? Well, I'm slightly hungover because I've had two consecutive days of heavy drinking, which is very unlike me because I've tried to knock it in the head as much as I can because I don't mind drinking. I like it. It loosens my lips a bit and I get into a bit of trouble, as you can imagine. But I do like it, but I really hate the next day being writ off. It's horrible. And I'm trying to be more productive with life, as we all know, because I tell you each and every week about things going on. None of this is interesting, but just to let you know, I'm a little bit tender. So if you could, not that you have any interaction with me live, but if you could just keep me in your prayers tonight, please, because I might not. I will make it. It'll be fine. I've got loads of coffee. I'm going to get a takeaway later. This is not ghostly information. But what is ghostly information is that I recently went out onto the Facebook page and said, what do you want different about the show? And I asked about times, the lengths of show, if you will. And to a person, well, except for one person, God bless him, who said, I like the 30-minute format. And everyone went, boo. Looks like people want it to be 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah. And, you know, I do bow to your requests. But as I've just started at the point of this, it won't be today. It won't start today. No. I'm lucky if I'll get through this episode today, which is going to be lengthy, but it's not going to be 45 minutes to an hour. But we will start that in earnest from the first episode of October, because I need to plan how I'm going to get more stuff in. I need to get more stories in. And also, I think, what a wonderful way to roll up to our favourite festive season, Halloween. So from the first episode in October, we're going to have 45 minutes to an hour long shows. And that's without adverts. If adverts do then come in, then they will be, the time of the show will go up by the number of time that, or the amount of time that the adverts are. Because I don't think adverts should take away from any listening pleasure. It's me. I might not get any adverts, you know, but never mind. Anyway, we have got some amazing stories to like, literally, one of the things I'm going to play at the end of the show came in last night. And I was like, I've already got this today's show done, like in my head, how I'm going to plan it out. And I listened to it and I was like, no, that's going to have to go in. And I'm going to save it to the end because although when I'm very hungover, which is very rarely these days, as I say, you know, what? But when I am hungover, I do like to get really scared and I like to like freak myself out because my anxiety level goes through the roof, like anyone who's hungover. And this thing freaks me out. So I think you should all be freaked out along with me. What you say? I say lovely. Let's do it. Yes, let's be scared together. So we've had a load of emails in and they're all bloody brilliant. And I'm going to crack on with email number one. And email number one has came in from a Katie Clayton. Nice name, bit of alliteration going there. Katie Clayton, I like a train. I don't know what sort of train I get on, but it doesn't like a very successful one. Anyway, Katie writes in, hi Kev, I have a few short ghost / spooky stories for you. I am a true science-minded skeptic these days, but have a fervent interest in the paranormal, and like you guys, I love a good scare. Hooray! So take these stories however you like, I will. Now she sent in five, so we're not going to do all fives today. What we're going to do is we're going to read two now, and we'll read the other three next week. Okay? That sound good? Good. Glad we're all agreed on that one. So story one. When I was a child, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a beautiful, detached, large, old Victorian house in southwest London. The kind of house with creaky pipes and ye old style pull chain flush toilet cisterns. That sounds bloody terrifying, doesn't it? And she's also put pipes in inverted commas, which I think may be a nod to Ghostwatch, which if you don't know about Ghostwatch, Google Ghostwatch. It was banned from the BBC because people kill themselves after watching it. It was like a parodied Like most Haunted or Zach Bagans things, but before they were even out, it's fantastic. Watch it. That's Ghost Watch from BBC. Anyway, moving on. She lives in this old mansion. I think you got a few bob, haven't you? You got a few quid knocking around. Anyway, a few minor spooky things have happened in this house that have always unnerved me, but equally are small. Oh, sorry, to get back. The ghost in that was called Pipes. That was the reference. Anyway, sorry about this. A few minor spooky things have happened in this house that have always unnerved me. In Ghostwatch, that is. The Pipes story. But equally are all small enough happenings that it never really bothered me or my family. It was the kind of house with old antique furniture that had its own history longer than the length of all of our lives added together. There was an antique vanity table with a three-panelled mirror on top of it. The kind you could use to see the back of your head if you turned to the mirrors. That resided in my Nana's bedroom, complete with old crystal jewellery organisers and innumerable perfume bottles. The vanity table was sworn by my Nana's grandmother, my great-great-grandmother, that if you stared into it too long, you would see the devil. She would warn her grandchildren never to stare too long into it, for obvious reasons, the devil. I could never bring myself to look too long into this mirror, but I always remember when I went near it, it gave me shivers, because the devil was in it. Unsurprising. There was one winter night when my Nana suddenly woke in the middle of the night and startled the rest of us awake with her yelping. Jesus. We all know she was quite the drama queen, so half-arsed we got up to see what the fuss was about. All I remember is her stumbling out of the bedroom terrified with her eyes filled with tears and just repeating that there was a woman at the foot of her bed in a long white dress. She says in brackets, I know, what a surprise, with long white hair just staring at her. And that she didn't want to go back in there to sleep. My dad went first, turning on the light and walking into the room. We followed, half excited, but also hoping to not see anything. And we were kind of disappointed when we didn't see anything. The room was totally normal, but I remember getting a shiver from walking back out past the vanity desk. Again, because it's the devil. That's bloody brilliant and terrifying. Because... I know that we all know, it's not just me who knows this. We've all seen these vanity mirrors. You've got the one in the middle, two other sides, which tend to be smaller than the middle one. And I have a personal tale about such a vanity mirror. In my parents' house, when we used to live, obviously, as a family. God, that was a weird way of saying that, wasn't it? You used to have to go into my mum and dad's room to turn the boiler on for the central heating and the immersion system and stuff. And... to do it, you'd open the bedroom. And for some reason, my mum and dad never had a bulb in their bedroom. No idea why. I never even asked, I should ask. But anyway, you'd walk through their bedroom to this cupboard and open it, and you'd switch the emergency heater on, and you'd turn back around, and you'd come out. And it used to terrify me because the door would close by itself anyway. Nothing to do with spookiness. It was just the way it was built. And we had a vanity mirror underneath the window to the right. So if you come into the room... imagine the room extends out to your right. The cupboard's right in front of you. And there's just this dark room with this vanity mirror on it. And it used to really scare me. Not the mirror, just the room in general. Then one night even, I go upstairs and I'm walking across and I put my hand in and I just hear this bang, bang to the right of me in the room. And there's no one else in the room. And I turned around and I've never come down a set of stairs so quick in my life. Honestly, I was like shit off a shovel. It was so quick. And I ran into the living room, panicked, and I was like, something's in the top bedroom. It was terrifying. We all ended up going, it was before mobile phones. We all ended up standing in the path and waiting till my brother came home from his mates down the corner. I went and got him, I think. And then we all went in together. Nothing there, but the vanity mirror had fell flat onto the unit. And it wasn't cracked or anything, it just fell flat. No windows open, no nothing. And everyone just passed it off, you know. Oh, well, I thought, I'm not going back in that room again. So anyway, that's my personal take on that. But vanity mirrors, yeah, bloody terrifying. So thanks, Katie. We'll have three more of your stories next week to finish up your email. But what an email. Short stories are great. I like long stories, and we've got a couple of them today. And they're bloody brilliant. But I do like a good short, sharp scare. How about you guys? Do you like that too? I do hope so. Okay, let's move on to email two. So, email two is a long one, and it's a good one. So this show is going to be longer, and hopefully more of these type of stories need to come in, and then we'll have, you know, we'll hit those hour marks. No problem, baby. And don't forget, send your stories in to talkaboutghosts@hotmail.com. But anyway, this story is from Jay Adams. And because of its length, I'm going to try and have to give this a bit of brevity. I need to try and give it a little bit of seriousness, you know, because I couldn't crack a joke all the way through this. I would get bored with that. It wouldn't be funny. So we'll choose our jokes wisely here, okay? Unless there's something blatantly that needs, I think is going to be dead funny, which very rarely it is. But we crack on. So this is the email. Hi, Kev. This is from Jay Adams. Hi, Kev. My story is called The Watcher. I like it when people name the stories. Let me start by saying I love the show. You make a very serious topic more easy to listen to and still make it as chilling as hell. Thank you, Jay. As you know, I'm a big fan of Becca. Say hi. I did. And I'll just say, it's freaking her out that like people are liking her, because not many people do in real life. I joke. I have one ghost story, and though it was over 20 years ago, I remember certain details very clearly and will for the rest of my life. I was born in the 60s and grew up in the area of fun supernatural TV shows such as Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie, The Munsters, The Addams Family, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, and my favourite Martian. There were even a couple of Disney movies that featuring ghosts and witches, Blackbeard's Ghosts. I like this. Go on, sorry, it's dead good. Just reel them out. Go on, Jay. Blackbeard's Ghost, The Cat from Outer Space, Escape to Witch Mountain. Lame, I know, but we were only allowed to watch Disney films and no TV after 6:30 in our house. Okay. So suffice to say, my entire education on the supernatural was that they were just like us, even aliens. You just had to connect with them and everything would be all right. They were funny and fun and sort of magical but harmless. Wow, I love that. I love the fact that, like, you know, just because of what you were only allowed Disney films. I also expect that you went out into the woods and went, ah, squirrel, sit on my hand and sing me a song. Squirrel, squirrel. Maybe you didn't. Also, I wasn't dim enough to think ghosts were friendly, but okay, I'll take that back then. But I thought they wouldn't or couldn't physically hurt you, and it was possible to communicate with them. As I grew older, I learnt about Ouija boards and mediums and other supernatural conduits. Great word. Everything I ever read or heard about ghosts and the supernatural definitely confirmed that it existed, and I was eager to experience, in speech marks, a ghost. I never had doubts that aliens, the supernatural and magic existed, but I just needed to find out how they existed and how to connect with them. Fair play. I figured aliens were just the right place at the right time. As I grew older and the movies coming out about aliens changed from friendly and cuddly to monstrous, I went right off wanting to meet them. Fair enough. I think of E.T. and then aliens. So I thought aliens were more like wrong place, wrong time. Fair play. Good paragraph. Magic, I figured, was a mixture of science and belief and special abilities and finding people who could teach you. In other words, it wasn't click the fingers and something happens, but more like hard work and study. So I went off magic as something for me, but I still believe in fairies and nature spirits and otherworldly things. Okay. There is a very interesting book about some children who were able to grow this most beautiful and lush garden on a sandy, barren, dirt patch of ground next to their caravan park by communicating with nature spirits. I've just done a Google search and can't find this book, and it's probably out of print, but it was available back in the day, and you can visit this garden. And since the children moved away, no one has seen or communicated with nature spirits since. Anyway, I digress, but it leads to my last category I was desperate to connect with, ghosts. I figured that a ghost would be easier to find than aliens, magic or fairies. Fit seems like a fair, logical assumption there, Jay. As there are lots of dead people and even documented stories of haunting and apparitions. That is logic personified. So I dabbled about with a Ouija board, haunted houses, meditation and hanging around graveyards. Absolutely nothing happened. I figured I just didn't have the gift or sensitivity, or maybe ghosts just don't want to communicate with me. Aww. I pretty much stopped dabbling in any kind of supernatural and otherworldly activities, and thinking by the time I moved into the Baker's Dozen are a group of 13 huge terrace houses that were originally built in the 1800s as brothels for sailors who were moored at the nearby naval base. To set the scene, the house I lived was very run down and dark and gloomy. There was a bedroom, a living room, bathroom, dining room, and a very small kitchen downstairs, a tiny garden and laundry out the back. There was a winding staircase next to the living room, and this led to a corridor upstairs that had 5 bedrooms and a bathroom. I tell you what, everyone's living in these massive houses in these stories today, aren't they? I say the house was gloomy, but that wasn't just because there weren't many windows and bare wooden floorboards, peeling paint and a whole aura of neglect. The rent was dirt cheap, which was why I moved in, and even though there were officially 6 bedrooms in the house, everyone had friends, lovers and randoms staying over, and we were very close to the Party District of King's Cross and Darlinghurst in Sydney. so the house was physically dark and run down, but there was always a party atmosphere and music pumping and people constantly coming and going. We were very friendly with the group of people in the house next door, and there was a lot of coming and going between the two houses. Their house was in a better state than ours, and some of the other baker's dozen houses had been converted into offices, a methadone clinic and private residences. Anyway, this is just to say, ghosts were the last thing on my mind when I moved in. I don't know any of the history of the baker's dozen or the house I was in, as it was only later that things started happening that I did a bit of research and found out the sad history of the house I lived in. And listeners, I think we're all about to find out about the sad history. I've never been a good sleeper, and as you can imagine, with so many people coming and going at all hours of the night and day, you just had to grab sleep while you could and then carry on with the unending party. That sounds like hell. That's Kev saying that. I didn't mind. I was young and had a boyfriend at the time who was living in my room with so many people constantly around me. I didn't have much time for solitude or reflection. My mind was as far away from the paranormal and ghosts as it could possibly be, and it took me a long time to even think of the strange things happening as being connected to the supernatural. It was the dreams that started off first. I had the most graphic dreams that I was crawling on my hands and stomach through mud and barbed wire. It was a battle scene, but in a swamp. There was a quick sand pit I was trying to crawl past, and then hands and dismembered limbs, heads, torsos, blood and skulls were bubbling out of the swamp and hands were trying to grab me. Nice. I can still remember this dream in detail years later. Now, as I mentioned, my early upbringing was Disney and early evening TV shows, so I still, even now, don't go in for war, horror or action movies. I was puzzled where this dream was coming from. Certainly not from movies I was watching or books I was reading. This was the most graphic, horrific and immersive dream I'd ever had in my life. There was a sheer feeling of absolute terror as well. I knew if one of those hands grabbed me and pulled me into the swamp, I would be lost forever. And you can tell by Kev's tone of voice, he's getting into this. I had this dream about once a week, and I always woke up during the night with a start because I was suffocating and my bed sheets would be twisted around me and I would be covered in sweat. The feeling of terror would gradually subside after about an hour. I would be able to finally fall back into an exhausted, dreamless slumber. I used to dream this dream and it didn't seem to be anything that would set it off. I noticed that I wasn't eating spicy food, watching horror films or reading books or any of the sort of connection to this horrible dream. One evening, I was sitting in the dining room with another girl, Emma, who lived in the house. Even with such a large number of people coming and going, there was the core group of us who paid the rent and claimed the bedrooms. Emma's bedroom was next to mine upstairs. Hers was the front of the house and mine was next to the stairs. I can't remember exactly what we were talking about, but I mentioned I was getting sick of this dream. She looked at me and very quietly asked, "What dream?" I said dismissively, "Oh, so just some dream about the war." She said, "Are you crawling in the mud?" Uh-oh. I said, "Yes." I described the dream in detail and she said she has exactly the same dream. I said, "Last time I thought it was, oh, sorry, I had the dream was Tuesday night. Same night as she did," she said. I thought it was a bit more than a coincidence, but I still wasn't thinking ghosts. However, it was as if talking about it unleashed the spirit as things really started picking up in the house after that talk. Up to that point, nothing of note was happening in the house and I was just having a spooky dream. Now other things started to happen and I recalled it all started after our little talk. Dun dun dun. See, you don't talk to people. Don't talk to anyone. That's my new rule. I'm going to be mute. First off, it was little things. Misplaced keys that reappeared where they'd been left, but they weren't there 5 minutes ago. Glasses falling off the table and smashing, but they were nowhere near the edge of the table. The TV turning itself off and on. The same for the hot plates on the stove. I still wasn't thinking ghosts, as with so many people coming and going, there was a logical explanation for everything that happened. I just thought people were playing stupid jokes. Even the dream, I put down to something I was doing, and even though Emma was having the same dream on the same night, I still didn't think ghosts. I thought that someone must have said something to us, or we'd seen something that unknowingly triggered the dream for both of us. Then one night, the five core people who lived in the house, Emma, Andrew, Susan, Joe and myself, were all in the living room at the same time, and some of the people who were friends of us. The sixth bedroom was rented out to a person none of us ever saw. He lived out of town and would come in late at night and leave early if he was ever around at all. He paid the rent and that was all we cared about. I think his name was Scott, but he has nothing to do with this story. Well, fair play. Unless you count me running into him in a bar 5 years later and the first thing he said to me was, "Don't you live in that haunted house?" I had barely spoken five sentences to this guy in my life and certainly never talked to him about the house being haunted. It was a rare occasion the five of us were all in the same space at the same time for more than 5 minutes, so I thought it was a good time to talk about a few housekeeping issues. I said we need to put some hooks up next to the door for our keys, as when I leave them on the table next to the telephone, they go missing. This was in the days before mobile phones, and there was one telephone downstairs in the hallway. Everyone denied touching the keys. I said, well, someone's doing it. As soon as I said that, a shadow moved past the doorway. I said, did you see that? Joe and Emma said yes, and Susan and Andrew said no. I said, I think this house could be haunted. Once again, when I said that, the temperature in the room seemed to drop to 5 degrees. I said, can you feel that? Emma and Joe said yes. Andrew and Susan, no. Then I heard a noise that sounded like a tennis ball had been dropped on the top step and was falling down the steps slowly one at a time. I walked out of the living room and looked up the steps. There was nothing. Then I heard it again, start at the top step and stood there waiting for the ball to come down the stairs. But this time the sound stopped about midway. I went back into the living room and said, don't tell me you didn't hear that. Again, Emma and Joe, yes. Andrew and Susan, no. This is boss, this story. I love it. I have to add, my boyfriend was firmly in the no camp, but he wasn't there that night. I said that sometimes when I answered the phone in the downstairs hallway, there was no one there and just a static and a sort of whispering. Hello. Susan and Andrew said it never happened to them. Joe and Emma said the same thing had happened to them a few times. Then Joe said one night he was in his bed asleep about 3 a.m. and got up to hear me calling his name. He got out of the bed and went to see what I wanted, but as soon as he put his hand on the doorknob to open the door, he got a cold chill and knew it wasn't me calling his name. He didn't even open the door. He got back in his bed and he couldn't sleep again for the rest of the night. One night a few weeks later, I was getting ready to go out and playing the Blondie song, Atomic, in my bedroom. Good song. I went into the bathroom downstairs to go to the toilet on my way out, and on the mirror written in lipstick was, oh, your hair looks beautiful. I laughed because it's obviously a line out of the song I'd just been listening to, and went to the living room to said, who wrote that on the mirror? I thought maybe it was a subtle dig that my music was too loud, or my music taste or singing weren't appreciated. Who wrote what? Andrew asked. I took him to the bathroom to show him what was on the mirror, but there was nothing written on the mirror. The mirror was still pretty dirty, so it wasn't like it had been wiped off, etc. Otherwise, there would have been a clean circle inside, well, on that front of the mirror. Andrew, ever the skeptic, said I must have seen the reflection of something in the mirror. I got even more howled down when I said maybe it wasn't lipstick and maybe it was written in blood. After that, I didn't like going in the bathroom downstairs unless I couldn't possibly avoid it. There was a very strong smell in the kitchen at times, which I thought was the ghost, and others said it was the drains backing up. One night, I was about to cook dinner and bent down and got a pan out of the cupboard when I stood up to the hot plate on the stove being fully on. There is no way that was on before, and I certainly couldn't get to It couldn't get to red hot in the few seconds I had my head down to the cupboard to fetch the pan. Also, there was a sort of whispering that everyone in the house could hear, but the non-believers said it was air coming through the vents or cats outside. It was like a low muttering, so you could never actually make out words, just a general sort of low noise that you could only hear when everything was very quiet, which didn't often happen in that house. While all this heightened activity was happening in the house, I started having another recurring dream. Like the swamp dream, it started off weekly and ended up being nightly. I couldn't check if Emma was having the same dream, as he'd since moved out, and the new occupant in the room, Tom, was firmly in the no camp. The dream was always the same, at the same time, every morning, the same dream. I would see a woman dressed in a long black dress with her hair in a bun walking slowly upstairs. I could only see her from the top of her head as I was looking down from the top of the stairs and she was coming up the stairs. When she got to around the middle of the stairs, I would suddenly be lying on my back in bed and I would be able to hear her coming along the corridor. In my dream, the door to the room was always open. Then she'd walk into my room and I'd be lying facing up on my bed with my eyes closed. She'd bend over. She'd bend over me and put her face down towards my face. But before I could see what she looked like, I'd wake up in terror and sit bolt upright in my bed. Then I'd feel an icy finger trace itself from the bottom of my spine to the top, and it physically hurt and my back would arch like a cat and ache. Regardless of the season, the room was always icy and I could see my breath in the air and in front of me for a second or two. Then it would be like a shadow lifted and the temperature would return to normal and the room seemed a little bit less dark. And my door would always be open even though I'd shut it very tight the night before. I asked my boyfriend if he'd left the door open, which he always denied. But it happened even when I slept alone, and I made a point to shut my door every night before I went to bed. It was always 3:15 exactly when I woke up. Then I thought about it, and that was the time. Sorry, then I thought about it, and that was the time. I'd always wake up and with the swamp dream as well. It wasn't possible to lock the bedroom door as no one had keys for anything except the front door. So later on, I put a little tiny latch on my door, but I would still wake up to find the door would be open. I also would always wake up on my back from this dream, and I've never slept on my back before moving in or since moving out of the house. I'm such a poor sleeper that every time I move during the night, I wake up. Except when I was living in that house. There it was like having sleep paralysis. I couldn't move at all, and whenever I woke up during the night, I would feel terror. I never rested, and some nights I would dread falling asleep. Then I did some research on the Baker's Dozen and found out their history. Here we go. They started out as glamorous, discreet brothels, and apparently sailors would get quite rowdy, and a rumour that a fight had broken out in one of the brothels and a sailor was killed and buried in one of the three back gardens. Oh, it doesn't say three. One of the back gardens. That seemed unlikely to me, but there would have been fights and drunken sailor carry on, and maybe somebody did die, but I don't think you could bury a sailor and no one notice. Fair play. After many years, the brothels had competition from strip clubs and bars up the road in King's Cross and fell into disrepair. Then the one I lived in became a halfway house and a drug addict hung himself in the kitchen.
Nice.
I don't know how, but I knew that my nightly visitor was the madam brothel, or sorry, the brothel madam, and she was looking to see who was in the house. Despite the icy finger and chill, it's like Netflix and chill. No, it's not. I also knew she didn't mean any harm and was just watching her house. I even remember waking up once to very cranky and said out loud, "Go and bother Andrew, he doesn't believe in you." Fair enough. Eventually, after about 6 months after the dream started nightly, I moved out, and thankfully my ghostly visitor didn't follow me. In total, I lived in the house for 18 months, but for the first 6 months were a blur, and I don't recall anything that I noticed, and it was only after my conversation in the kitchen with Emma that suddenly the house seemed very haunted, and I really noticed things, weird things were happening. I never had any type of intense ghostly experience like that ever again, and I certainly cured my desire for a ghostly encounter. However, I do believe it's left a kind of residual effect. Dun dun dun. Once I slept over at my friend's dad's house, and it was a midpoint to the concert we were attending that day, or the next day. We got there quite late and basically said hello and went straight to bed. I had a very strange dream about a woman walking around the house. The next morning at breakfast, I said, "Is this house haunted?" My friend said, "Don't be ridiculous." But her dad said, "Yes." She was very surprised and said, "I grew up here, I've never seen a ghost." But her dad said, "It's the ghost of the woman who previously lived here." Once again, it didn't feel like a malevolent presence. Just she liked to wander around looking to see who was in the house. So that's my ghost story. It's a bit long. It is a bit, but it's bloody boss. But everything happened. Even though it's over 20 years ago, I remember clearly that everything happening as I've written it to you. Maybe there are other things that happened to other people in the house that they've told me and I've forgotten. Maybe there were small things that happened to me that I've forgotten, but I will never forget those dreams. And even now, remembering both of them, I feel a cold chill. Thanks for the podcast and the chance to tell my ghost story. All the best, Jay. Well, thank you, Jay. That is amazingly scary. And if you have a story as scary as Jay's, you need to send it and I'll read it out. Yes, that's what you need to do in my best ghost accent. Yeah. Send it over to talkaboutghosts@hotmail.com and I will read it out. There's also another little email from Jay that I'm going to read out after the midpoint. The midpoint. It's half past now. Half past. It's 30 minutes in. But we're still going to do the midpoint and have more ghost stories after the midpoint. But, yes, there's a little trick I've done here. It's because I've got another story after Jay's second email after the break. And you'll see why I've done it. But, you know, enough hints for now. Let's do a midpoint. Hurrah! Ein, zwei, drei, drieben. German beatbox. God, that was awful. I couldn't beatbox. I don't like beatboxers. I don't think it's music. Well, that's my opinion. Shoot me if you want. Please don't shoot me. It's the midpoint. Hurrah! Yay! Another midpoint. Hooray! I love it. I love it. So, it's a midpoint. 30 minutes in. These are getting longer. You know, maybe I'm just subliminally trying to please you. I know I said we'd start in October, but it looks like this is going to be a biggie. Biggie Smalls. Anyway, do send your stories in to talkaboutghosts@hotmail.com and I will read them out. Get us over on the Twitter @talkaboutghosts. Go over to Instagram, all that jazz. Join the Facebook group. It's lovely. You have to answer a few questions to get in, but then you, I'll let you in if you seem to be nice. I will check your profile out to make sure that you're just not trying to hawk your wares. So be mindful of that. But as long as you're not and you're a nice person, you'll get in. And there's loads of lovely people in there sharing ghost stories, and it's lovely. Yeah. And little funny memes and all that carry on. Just what you'd expect from a group of lovely people with access to the internet. Yes. Obviously, if you'd like to keep this show going full pelt, then do go over to the Patreon page and you can become a Patreon. And for that, you'll get an extra monthly show. There's all my scribblings. There's a video of me doing a pretend Most Haunted episode at a castle in Wales, which names evade me. Me and Becca filmed that, and that was quite funny, I thought. But yeah, go over to patreon.com/ We Need to Talk About Ghosts and sign up to be a Patreon. And not only will you get all of the extra additional things there, you also get this person, I'm pointing at myself, you can't see that, singing your name out to say thank you on one of the episodes. And guess what? We've got people who are going to get the name sung out by this lunatic. Yes. Just to say, if anyone else referred to themselves as a lunatic, I'd say, I hate them. What a stupid knobby thing to say. Look at me, I'm crazy, I've got banter. So if I met myself, I'd hate myself. Just to let you know that. Anyway, the lovely named Tamra Backham has gone over to patreon.com/ We Need to Talk About Ghosts. And for that, for signing up, Tamra Backham, she's gone over to the Patreon and she's made herself a Patreon queen. Tamra Backham, she's gone over to Patreon and signed up, and now she is the queen of Patreon. On wasn't going to be good. I told you these aren't great, you know, but it's what you get, you know. It's part of the privilege of signing up. We've also had another guy sign up, and his name, get onto this for a name, his name is M.E. Tumulty. Yes. And I was following him on Instagram. He's got some really spooky images on there. I don't know if he makes himself, but you should check him out. I don't know how you do it, but go to my page. He follows me, I follow him. M.E. Tumulty. He's gone over to Patreon and he signed up to Team Poltonice. And thank you for that, M.E. Tumulty. Let's sing your name. And let's do it spooky because, you know, your Instagram's spooky. M.E. Tumulty, I thank you for your patronage. M.E. Tumulty, you're going to scare the pants off me. But not in a gay way. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But thank you, M.E. Tumulty. Yes, that's wonderful of you to sign up. And we have a final person. And sincerely, I do hope this is their real name because it's a belter of a name. But I do think it's going to be a challenge for me to sing this because their name, and I'm not, if I get this wrong, then you'll understand why. Their name, their wonderful name, is Carl Antoine Uthakowski de Solima. That's Carl Antoine Uthakowski de Solima. And I had to try and put that into a bloody song. So thank you for that. Thank you, parents, for me. Right, let's have it a go. Let's give it a go. Whew.
Pretty little thing that don't mind the dozen. That ain't nothing but your time loving. Hey, Carl Antoine Uthakowski de Solima. I'm glad for your patronage. Yes, I am.
Friggin' hell. Let's try that again.
Pretty little thing got down by the dozen, that ain't nothing but your term loving. Hey, Carl Antoine Uthakowski de Solima, I'm glad for your patronage, yes I am.
Yes, we've got it in there. Bloody hell. If you've got a name like that, then don't bother joining. I joke. Thank you very much. Go over to patreon.com. Don't do that. God knows what you'll find there. Webcams and stuff. Go over to patreon.com/ We Need to Talk About Ghosts and go and sign up to support the show. And if you don't want to do that or you can't afford it, that's absolutely fine. But you can do things for free. You can go and share the show, rate the show, do all wonderful things like that. So I'll leave it up to you and your conscience to decide. Oh, what a bellend. I am. Anyway, we've got that email to get on with, haven't we? So let's get back to the show, mofo. And we're back once again with the illest of behaviours, and that behaviour is ghost stories. So, I said before the break that we did have another email from Jay, and it's in response to an email from another listener. Now, this is where it gets interesting. So he says, Hi Kev, I was listening to the latest podcast this morning on my way to work. There was a Brummy letter writer who was a bit of a skeptic. You agreed with her about the details some people put in their stories about a particular time they woke up or something that happens at the same time and how that makes the story seem a bit fake, like it's something someone heard so they put it in the story to make it a bit more authentic. My story, which I've just read out, had a specific time in. That was every time in the morning I woke up after having this icy finger trace up my spine at 3:15 every morning. I still remember it after all these years. You may wonder how I can be so sure of the time. I forgot to mention one detail. I had a big clock in my room that showed a digital display and lights. So when I woke up in the night, I always knew what time it was. Being an insomniac, I'm obsessed with the time and I've always had a clock in my room that I can see at night. I have to know how long I've been asleep, how much longer I have to sleep, how long it's going to take me to get to sleep and other thoughts that just end up keeping me awake. I'm like that. I was last night anyway. When I lived in the house, which we've just spoke about, I'd wake up with the icy finger and then manage to unarch my back and look at the clock and it was always 3:15. Because the dream about the swamp happened about once a week, it took me a while to realise it was the same time that I'd wake up every morning. However, the icy finger happened nightly and in the end, it didn't take me so long to realise, again, it was 3:15 on the dot. It's too late to add it into my story now. It's not because Kev's done this, because he's nice. I'm a nice guy. But you can be sure I knew the exact time I woke up. I still have a clock in my room for when I wake up overnight, but now it's random times, and sometimes I even manage to sleep through a whole night and not wake up at all. At the time, it was odd and very annoying that I woke up at the same time every night, but having heard ghost stories throughout the years, I am aware that the time is central to many stories, and it does seem to lend a bit more credibility to something being outside of your control. So I just wanted to add that small detail to my story. I now have a clock in my room, hence I knew the time, but forgot to tell you that in the story. You've never been to my bedroom. I like this next line, and probably never will. Hello, and wondered how we could be so sure it was 3:15 and would smell like a fraud. Anyway, looking forward to next week's podcast and stories. Thanks for the podcast. I'm recommending it to everyone. Thank you. You make me laugh out loud and scare me silly at the same time. Well, that's a good thing. Thank you, Jay. That's very nice of you to say. But here's this interesting thing. 3:15, he says there. I've never, in all of my ghost storytelling and reading and writing and stuff, I've never, ever came across 3:15 being a specific time. I've had, you know, there's stories about people waking up at a set time every time. 3:33 comes up, as you will all know. You'll have all heard that because it's meant to be a mockery of the Holy Trinity and all that jazz. And 3:16 sometimes, not 3:15, sometimes just 3 o'clock. That'll pop up again, allegedly mocking the Holy Trinity. But 3:15, I've never heard. Anyway, let's go on to another email. And this email is from Diana Deming. And it was actually lost in my junk folder, but I've retrieved it. And this is called Ghost Story from Denton, Texas. Hey, Kev, love the podcast. Thought I'd send in a ghost story from university. Hope you get a chance to read it on the show. When I was studying at the University of North Texas, I stayed in the oldest dormitory on campus called Bruce Hall. This was just a few years ago, around 2014/15. It had been there since the school was established and had originally been an all-female residence hall. This would have been between 1920 and 30, or so according to the stories. There were three main ghost stories attached to the building that were passed on by resident assistants and students alike. The least believable centred around an upside-down clock behind the front desk, which was stopped at something like 3:15. See why I've done this? People, do you see why I've done this? Now, Kevin just pausing a Diana story here. I am a big believer in serendipity and in seriality, which is, you know, things come along in sequence or in bunches. But I did freak out when literally today I'm going through my emails and Diana had emailed in and said, I don't think you got my first email. So I went to my junk, found it, brought it out. I thought, oh yeah, I haven't read that. And then as I'm pre-reading the stories to put on today's show, 3:15 popped up again. So I planted it, but I did just say, I've never heard of a ghost story with 3:15 being the time. And here's two on the bounce. Dun, dun, dun. Keep an eye for 3:15, I'm telling you. Anyway, so that was wasn't that fun? Wasn't that worth waiting for? I do think so. You're welcome. Anyway, supposedly, a demon had been exorcised from a student and had passed through the clock while leaving, saying that anyone who touched it would be the next one possessed, and it had promptly stopped and turned upside down. It had been left there for years as no one wanted to test the story by moving it. I like that story, and I agree, it's probably the least believable. But 3:15, everyone, 3:15. As I like to call it, 3:15. Anyway, the second story revolved around the death of a black boiler room maintenance man, dubbed Boiler Room Bob. who'd been either lynched in the basement or killed, fucking hell, or killed in an elevator accident, depending on who told the story. The most famous of the ghosts of Bruce Hall was called Wanda. Apparently, she is so well known there have been investigations by one of the American ghost hunting television shows. The story goes that while at university, Wanda had lived in the dorms while attending university. She'd become pregnant, and knowing that she would be ostracized and potentially kicked out of the school, she began trying to lose the child. Jesus. Without access to an abortion, oh, I don't even want to read this, she decided to take matters into her own hands. On the fourth floor, there's an attic catwalk, which houses plumbing and whatever else dormitories store in attics. She supposedly went into the catwalk in an effort to find privacy and tried to self-abort using a wire hanger. Did I tell you I'm hungover and getting a takeaway later? Did I tell you that? Maybe not anymore. Bloody hell, poor girl. Wanda accidentally injured herself as well and bled to death in the attic. Oh, it got better. The story got better. Good. And bled to death in the attic. It was said that she stayed around after death, living in the dorms and taking a severe dislike to men. I'm not surprised because men are pricks. And that's from a man. My first year living in the dormitory, I had no real experiences. Past one of the back stairwells being vaguely sinister to walk through at night and the music practice rooms being in the basement being a little spooky. My second year, I transferred to the special interest wing for music students, which was housed on, and she says, insert suspenseful pause, the fourth floor. This was when I began having ghostly encounters. Initially, I had a roommate who was not exactly considerate when it came to our shared space. I didn't notice anything strange, and if things were moved around or missing, I assumed it was her. She got into a rather bad accident, though, and transferred to the first floor, and I was able to have the room to myself for the remainder of the semester. She returned her key upon moving rooms, so only the staff and I had access to the room. The first incident I noticed happened that night of a concert. Happened the night of a concert. I was running late, and after hastily applying my makeup, had left my room in a rush, planning on organising my vanity once I had returned from my performance. Upon arriving in my room, all my makeup had been lined up along the edge of the vanity counter from smallest to largest. I couldn't explain it, as I had watched my former roommate return her key. And the RA, I imagine that's the assistant person that you said before, that would have been doing any hot checks would have been at the concert with me. Leave that bloody room. The following week, I was doing my laundry and watching a movie on my laptop around 11 p.m. I had gathered one load from the dryer and set it on the beanbag chair to be folded once the rest of my laundry had finished. I'll admit I was watching a scary movie, so I was already a little spooked, but what happened next I could not explain. All of the laundry fell out of the beanbag chair. The pile was not particularly large, and even if it had come down to balance, most of my smaller items like socks, underwear and small washcloths had been at the bottom, sitting in a sort of indent. It would have had to be lifted out of the chair, and it simply didn't tumble off the top. There was nothing left on the chair, everything had been thrown to the ground. Once it happened, I closed my laptop and walked downstairs to the front desk, where the 3:15 clock is, as we know. I added that bit in, but we do know that. Walked down to the front desk, sitting there with the staff on duty as I calmed down. A moment later, one of the boys from down the hall came downstairs, claiming he'd seen a red light darting across his room. I pause there, Kev pauses there, because I've seen red lights darting around the room. I know that Emma and Dan from Real Life Ghost Stories have seen red lights darting around. Because we were messaging each other saying, have you seen red light? And honestly, this is the thing. I am telling you people, it's a bloody thing. That's freaked me out. I didn't read that bit before. Now I've caught myself unawares with some terrifyingly spooky stuff. Jesus, where was I? It's in a red light darting across his room. He lived across the hall from where Wanda had died in the attic. It was quiet for a while, but the last experience I had before getting a new roommate happened whilst I was gone. I left my room as usual to go to class, and upon coming back, I had trouble opening my door. The lock was fine, but I couldn't swing the door in because something was wedged behind it. After a few minutes of wiggling the door and finally making enough space to get my hand behind the door and grasp around, I found what was blocking the door. My beanbag chair had been pushed up against it from the inside. I was able to grab it and pull it out from where it had gotten lodged, but go inside, but I still can't explain how it got there. After that, someone new was assigned to the room and I was able to explain away other strange experiences. Diana Deming, thanks. That would be terrifying. Imagine going to a room you've locked and you can't get in because something's moved up against the door. And this red light thing, come on. I mean, seriously. I've seen like about 3 or 4 red lights. Becca's seen them too. And I've seen others in my dad's house as well. As I've said on the previous podcast, and Emma from Real Life Ghost Stories listened to that show. And she messaged me and said, me and Dan have seen these lights. And we were going back and forth, like, going, no. But, like, sincerely, it bloody happens. And now there's another one on here. Freaking me out, baby. So that was Diana's email. Thank you very much, Diana. That is amazing. And I do apologise that I couldn't find your email originally. If you've got stories as good as these guys, get them over to talkaboutghosts@hotmail.com. Now, you'll recall at the start of the show, I did say I wanted to end on something that came in, like, literally overnight. And I am going to. And it's spooky audio. So one of the ladies who follows on Instagram, a very nice girl by the name of Kayla Walsh, she has sent me a message because she's went on a holiday recently with a boyfriend and something spooky happened. And I'll read out verbatim how the messages have gone, and then I'm going to play you some audio, and I'll let it be the last thing. I won't even say goodbye at the end of it. You can just email me or whatever what you think that sound is. But you'll hear it, okay. So I'm just going to read the story as it stands, and then we're going to go. And I will see you all next week. This is going to end up being around an hour. Well, it's over. It's 45 minutes now as I look at the clock. So you're welcome. Hey. So don't forget, I'll say all the goodbyes now. Send your stories in to talkaboutghosts@hotmail.com. Get over to the patronage page if you want to see this now 45 minutes to an hour long show continue, which is patreon.com/we need to talk about ghosts. That would be fantastic of you. Go and join the fantastic Facebook group with all the lovely people in there. There's some really nice people in there. Go over to the Instagram, which is where I'm getting some stories from now, and they're fantastic. And this next one is from Instagram, and it's from Kayla Walsh, and I'm going to crack in with it right now. Now, as I've said, the last part of this is audio, and you need to really listen out for it. And I'm not going to return after that audio. So don't be like, why is Kev not explaining what? That's the point. I think it's freaky enough to be left alone. So I crack on. So she sent me an email, and it said, she didn't. She sent this on Instagram. She says, hi, Kev. I listen to the podcast all the time, and I thought you'd really enjoy what has happened to us tonight. This has all took place in the last 48 hours. I'm staying in the Lakeside Manor in County Cavan, Ireland, with my boyfriend tonight. What has happened has freaked me out so bad, and I knew we had to send it to you straight away, as we're currently sitting up really scared of what we've just heard. The hotel is beside a really pretty lake, but the hotel itself is extremely old-fashioned and full of antiques and old furniture. My boyfriend began hearing noises at the start of our stay, and I kind of shrugged them off as I was tired and hungry, and he's somewhat of a joker. Later I started to notice myself noises from above, and I knew we were on the top floor and there's no attic. Things started to click, like the button on the kettle or strange noises coming from inside the room that we couldn't explain. So he decided he wanted to try and film us sleeping in the creepy room for the night. He recorded about 5 minutes, and when I found out what he was doing, I said turn it off. He listened back, being bored. And this is what we heard. We've edited down the full recording to just 35 seconds, and the noise starts around 26 seconds in. The noise at the start of the video is just him grabbing a Red Bull from an ice bucket, that's all. And then we both jump into bed. I'm going to play this video now. But she then, after that, she sent that video to me. She says, "That this is the old hotel where we're staying, and this is a frame on the wall of a random old fisherman in an antique frame." And she sent me a few links. She sent me then an update after this, when I got back to her and said, "This is amazing." And it says, update of the night. My boyfriend was awakened by heavy breathing on his face in the middle of the night. Too afraid to open his eyes, he just turned over to me. We were up most of the night and checked out first thing this morning. We were the only people to eat breakfast in the hotel that morning, as if no one else stayed around following the night. We will never go there again. I mentioned to the woman at reception when giving the keys back of our creepy stay, and she didn't even respond or say thank you, have a good day. So she clearly knows what's going on. Now, listen to this. I kind of don't even want to say what you should be listening out for, because it should be so bloody evident. What you're going to hear is you're going to hear like a loud noise, which is them taking a kind of Red Bull out of an ice bucket. And then they're just chatting about the place between themselves. And it's behind this chatter that you will hear something. And this is brilliant. This is why I love doing the show. This is just terrifying. So here we go. I will see you all next week. I love you all. Tatty bye.
Imagine if you can actually, like, something wrong with you. That's a comfy. This room reminds me of the room we had when we were on holidays. It's exactly like it.
Big huge curtains, Terry.
Oh, yeah, kind of.
Big curtains for balcony. This big huge queen bed. I was on this side. Locker over there. Bathroom in the exact same spot. Is it?
I'm gonna sleep.